Warning, the following content occasionally contains adult themes and language, which is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cinematic Rewind. Joining me today to talk about Deadpool is Cookie.
What's up, everybody?
And Regent.
A fourth wall break instead of a fourth wall break? That's like 16 walls.
Roughly, I think. We are talking about Deadpool, and it has an 8 out of 10 on IMDb, has an 85 on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 65 on Metacritic. So, I actually surprisingly did not go to see this in theaters just due to my age at the time. I wasn't old enough to go and see it, but I did see it as soon as it came out on like DVD and Blu-ray and such.
Oh my gosh, that's a big hit right there. Oh my gosh, that's okay.
Yeah, I was at the time it came out in what, February of 2016?
Yep, Valentine's Day week.
Mm-hmm. So I was just freshly 17. So I think that technically now is old enough to go and see it, but I don't think at the time I could.
And she brought that up. I don't know how much you paid attention because you weren't old enough to go see it, but the marketing for it. Did you remember the marketing for it?
Oh, yeah. I was all into the film when it was announced and everything, but.
Well, I think Regent knows where I'm going with it. It was like they were trying to market like it was a Valentine's Day movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember.
Yeah, it was awesome because at the theaters, they kind of did the same thing. Like they was really trying to push it. And that was a fun time, especially for anyone listening that didn't know. When that movie came out, because it was coming out around Valentine's week, they were really trying to push it as this love story. And they wanted it where women were going to talk boyfriends slash husbands, dates or whoever to go see the movie. And then, of course, they would get their hearts broken that it's like, this is not what I thought this was. Good times.
My boyfriend said this was a superhero movie, but that guy just turned that guy into a fucking kebab. Just one of the many lines.
Yeah, that's one of the lines of the movie.
Yeah, it's the bridge scene right before they do one of the many flashbacks in the film.
Which is a great introduction to the film. I remember, and you two let me know if y'all saw it, that a part of that was actually based off of like a test footage that they did a few years prior. Did you see that before?
That was the one Ryan Reynolds personally funded.
Personally funded and personally leaked.
And personally leaked, yeah. I enjoyed finding that out.
Yeah, so after the film, he was, I guess, able to finally say that he was the one who leaked it. And then that's what got everyone hyped and what eventually allowed the movie to happen.
What a great way to just have troll within troll. I mean, even before the movie started traditional filming, it was already going down the path of humor, sarcasm, trolling, all sorts of stuff. It was just such a great film all around for it.
Oh, yeah, so much. So let's go ahead and dive into it a little bit. You were very shocked that I was not old enough to go and see it, Cookies. So let's dive into your history with it. Did you actually go to see it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was definitely either first week or second week. I only knew of Deadpool from the Wolverine film. And I know that's a bad representation, but I did not know Deadpool at all from the comic books. I knew nothing of him. So when I started hearing in the news that it was like, hey, here's this Deadpool movie. And I'm like, well, didn't he die in the X-Men Origins film? And then that's when I got educated as that was a horrible rendition of what Deadpool was.
Oh, hell yeah. It was a horrible rendition.
Yeah. And from the lead up, everything was looking so good that I was like, hey, I'll give this movie a try. I like superhero movies. And the MCU was doing pretty well at the time. And I wanted to give Fox another try because they were doing so good with X-Men First Class. And I believe Days of Future Past came out around this time, too. So they were doing really well, at least from 20th Century Fox's standpoint, that I was like, okay, I'll give y'all some more try. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I ended up rewatching it again in the theaters like years ago. One of those like cheaper theaters where it's like $2 and you watch some of the classic films and stuff like that. And then I rented it recently for it. So all viewings that I've really enjoyed.
So something I want to dive into there is you mentioned that he died in X-Men Origins Wolverines, but did you stay for the two post-credit scenes for that film?
Honestly, I hated it so much I didn't stick through with it. I think at that time, post-credit scene still wasn't like the standard. I think it was still kind of like some movies had them and then some didn't. And I think that's why I just didn't stick with it, because I was like, man, this movie was shitty to begin with.
Completely fair. The movie had two, like I said. The first one being William Stryker walking and then someone stopping him, as was the end of the film where she told him to keep on walking, don't stop.
Which makes sense, because he has to survive for X2, so that makes sense.
And then the final post-credit scene is a decapitated body of Deadpool finding his head with his mouth unsewn, like it burst open, him grabbing the face, and then Deadpool just saying, shh, and that's it. So he survived. But people still didn't want to see anything to do with that Deadpool, so.
Where you could start arguing which one's canon.
Well, based off the second one, if we ever do that, that one is no longer canon.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because the rest of the movie is atrocious. But back to Deadpool, the movie, the real one.
Yes. So, Regent, what is your history with the film?
I'm definitely one of the people who saw it week one, went with my missus. That was like 2 months into our relationship. I think that was like our third movie we saw together. First one we saw was The Force Awakens, and there was another movie in between there. We had a rhythm growing up seeing a movie every month as like a date night. Yeah, she let me pick this one because Marvel is a big part of my fandom and nerdom. And we went and saw it, and we both have our opinions about the movie. I do own it in 4K.
Okay, this is one of the films I actually don't have in 4K yet. I do have a Blu-ray. I just haven't gotten a 4K copy that I like the look of yet, because I'm one of those weird individuals who wants the box art to look really nice or unique or something. I don't want to just be the standard movie poster or something. I want it to be different.
See, that's why you wait to the holiday, because the holiday in the last 2 years, they released both movies as a set. The joke line is supposed to be like, it's a bigger sack, as a joke, as a bigger set, because it's both movies in one package and Deadpool's dressed up as Santa Claus with the Santa hat and a red sack on his back.
Oh, okay. Because I have Deadpool 2, the super duper fucking cut or something along those lines.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, and then I have the Walmart edition Blu-ray of the first film where he's riding a unicorn. So that's the one I have. But yeah, I definitely want to get this movie in 4K because it's just fantastic. My history with the film would be I wanted to see it. I couldn't see it. Waited till it came out on Blu-ray and then paid my sister, who was old enough at the time, to go and purchase an R-rated film to go and buy it for me. She went and picked it up, came home, watched it, loved it. I did actually have some history with the character before X-Men Origins Wolverine. I had seen him in like cartoon crossovers, some comic books. I wasn't a huge Deadpool fan. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend to know a whole lot about him, but I know enough now, and I know more now than I did then. But I did have a basis of the character and did not like the rendition that they had in X-Men Origins, just due to he wasn't fun.
I have a confession to make. I was really confused for quite a bit of years, actually, until this movie finally came out. I got him and Deathstroke mixed up a whole lot. And I know that sounds really bad from a comic book standpoint, but if you're not deeply into it and you're just watching it from the outside, sometimes it almost seemed like it was just a color swap out pilot. But that's just my perspective.
That's intentional. It was a joke towards Flayed Wilson.
Okay, so it was intentional that he did look similar to Deathstroke.
And the same last name, yeah.
Got you. Okay. Yeah. Because especially if you don't know all that comic stuff, that's where I sometimes, without knowing, if you just look at the artwork, there's definitely times where I was like, I didn't know which one is which.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters like that across Marvel and DC that just sort of mix, and it's hard to tell the difference. I still don't know the difference between Swamp Thing and Man Thing. I think Swamp Thing is DC, but I'm not sure.
No, you're right. Swamp Thing is, in fact, DC.
Okay, but like I said, there's characters like that where people are just not sure. Maybe more people know that Swamp Thing is DC than I do, but there are characters like that.
Well, speaking of confusing characters, when you start looking at the rest of the cast, a couple of them I was getting confused on because, like, okay, Colossus, for example. I loved the original X-Men movies. X3 or The Last Stand, I know it has its issues, but I still knew that storyline pretty well. So Colossus had me a little bit confused because I believe he was in the original trilogy.
Yes.
He was in 2 and 3.
Yeah, so I was going off of that where I was like, okay, are they rewriting this? And then I knew nothing about Negasonic Teenage Warhead. I knew nothing about her. I figured she was probably like maybe this thrown away character from back in the day, and they brought it in kind of as a joke. I could be definitely wrong, but that's how I perceived it because I knew nothing of her.
She's a new generation, a new X-Men character from 2001. So she's been in the comics for 20 going on 21 years come August. She's part of like the Hellfire Club X-Men, the main X-Men. Then she joined like Hellfire Club, which is a secondary villains group, and then Mercs for money.
Now, I think an interesting thing to think about is why they chose certain characters. Because if I remember correctly, wasn't it like this was on a tight budget because this was a risk for them at the time?
Looking up the statistics, the budget was only $58 million for the movie as a whole.
Yeah, that's a tight budget for a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. And I think that's what it was they were trying to find characters that they could legally use without having to invest a lot of money in, which is why pretty much the entire cast is nothing related to the original X-Men trilogy. And then it turned out to be a commercial success.
It turned out to be a very big success. They made back their entire budget on opening weekend alone.
Yeah, it's a reminder of listening to the fans, because the fans will support with their dollars.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We've seen time and time again that when you listen to your fans, things turn out to be better.
Yeah, to this day, we've got numerous examples.
Oh, yeah, and it's still a reoccurring problem to where a studio thinks that they know better or what works. Fine example being the new X-Men movie, Phoenix, whatever the new one is.
Dark Phoenix.
There you go. It was horrible. I don't even want to remember the name.
Yeah, that's a good example where it's like, I feel like that's people being stubborn. It was definitely a cash grab, no doubt about it. Because leading up to that point, everybody was like, look, we're kind of burned out with these films. Apocalypse was a good example where like, hey, we're not really feeling these movies. Here's what I think what happened was they had certain IPs doing really well. Because by the time that we're talking about Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix came out, I think Deadpool 2 came out by then. And both Deadpool 1 and 2 were very successful films. I think that's where it was like, when you start having the higher ups, the CEOs and stuff that's making like the financial decision, that they're basing it off of not fan related decisions. It's almost more like, oh, these comics sell well, these characters do well, this has to be a success, we'll drop some big names in there, that's all we need to do.
Yeah, X-Men Apocalypse actually came out in the same year that Deadpool 1 did. So at that point, they should have learned for the next couple installments that this series isn't working anymore. And hopefully, Marvel, as we know it now, can release an X-Men film that does work. And I think that they will. They've done it with so many characters that people didn't think was going to work.
Yeah, and not to talk too much about this already, but from what I remember, Ryan Reynolds has officially gone on record for having meetings about Deadpool 3 with Disney. I just don't know if it's official yet.
It is official.
Excellent. So yeah, so whenever that happens, that's going to be a fun time figuring out how they make that canon.
I will say that Deadpool already has made his first MCU appearance.
I'm interested.
Full costume, everything. And it's out there to watch right now if you guys know or don't know.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't want to spoil it for any listeners. So if you're interested, it looks like all you have to do is Google it. I know I will later.
Yeah, so it's not too much to spoil. It's not too super heavy spoiler territory. It's literally Deadpool and Korg sitting on a couch reacting to a trailer.
That's right. I did see that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not super spoiler heavy. It's just them interacting as characters and being like, so how does one get into the MCU? And he's like, abandon all your hopes and dreams and then check your email. So he's already made his first MCU appearance. Now we just wait for him to appear either in a movie with other characters or get his own movie, which he is going to get. So what did you guys think about the way that they decided to tell the story in bits and pieces? Like they kept jumping back and forth between present and past until you eventually catch up to the present day, all revolving around that bridge scene. We'll go to you first, Regent.
I mean, it would make sense because we've learned from other movies that not everyone goes into seeing a superhero movie knowing that character and expect to hit the ground running. So it was nice in terms of plot development. Talk about character with that. How did we get here? Here's what led to it. Okay, now back to it.
What did you think, Cookie?
Now, we've talked about this on the podcast before, and it's not really much of a spoiler, but as a potential spoiler for the Eternals, I had an issue with how they were jumping back and forth. With Deadpool, to me, it was perfect. It was spot on. I never at any point while I was watching felt like, oh my gosh, I'm just so confused, or I hate that they keep jumping back and forth. To me, it was very well done. It was very smooth. And especially from an origin standpoint, I loved how they decided to start with with it and kind of do the jumps, because it made it even more exciting to find out what brought, especially like Wade Wilson, to being that character of Deadpool, to see what brought all that stuff up. It actually increased it even more to be entertaining, and that hunger for more story. And the characters were also very interesting as well, especially from like a revenge point where you're like, oh gosh, I hate like Ajax, I hate him. You have like Vanessa as the love interest. You're like, oh my gosh, I want to see how this all turns out. And they done it really well, which I don't usually see far too often, especially in superhero movies, if they do jump backs and so forth. And this one, I think, should be a blueprint for other movies, even though it's been 6 years, or just about 6 years at this point, and movies still fail at it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like this is a prime example of how to use non-linear storytelling to tell a more compelling story. You start off with something interesting right off the get-go and then jump back to fill in the gaps, not to fill time. You don't want to use a jump back to fill in time and have those filling up time moments be the exciting bit. You want to look forward to what comes next. How do we get here? How do we get to the future? Because if you can make people care about, well, how did we get here, then they're going to care about the rest of the film.
Which to me, it also leads to the pacing in the film is really well done, because I never feel like it's slow at any point, and I never feel like it's going too fast either. It's just, for it to be jumping back and forth, it is very steady with energy the entire time from beginning to end.
I can 100% agree. I was just watching it about an hour ago, and I can honestly say I didn't feel bored, even with how many times I've seen this film over the years and knowing exactly what's coming. I just didn't feel like it was too slow or too fast. They did a really good job pacing this film to always be captivating throughout every moment. There's either a joke or something building up, something in front of you that you can just sit there and enjoy. And I think the comedy helps a lot with that. How did you guys feel about the comedy in this film?
There are so many quotable lines from that movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the comedy. I think it is the number one thing in this movie that I enjoyed. But I also say that as in, like, it doesn't take away from anything else. The action's great. The storyline is actually pretty entertaining, and an interesting storyline too, when you look at all the pieces. But the comedy is, especially when this came out, it was different for us. And kind of what Regent did in the beginning, that whole fourth wall thing, we did not really have that in much movies, if we ever did. I can't really think off the top of my head which movie's done that, but I know probably one or two may have in some form. But for this, we just didn't have this type of comedy, especially from a superhero standpoint. I mean, at this point, we had 8 years of the MCU. It was all clean superhero films. The only other movies I can think of that might not have been clean, they were just more like bloody and gruesome, like Blade. But to have this type of humor where it was like sometimes toilet humor, sarcastic humor, smart humor, fourth wall breaking humor, talking to the audience, this is brand new and it was very fresh.
Oh yeah, it was great. They started off this film with introducing what kind of film you're going to be getting into. It was also great for the sense of story, but also great for the sense of comedy, because one of the opening scenes is him literally just sitting in a cab and he sees haunted Segway tours and he just shoves that in his little uniform there, and then he just plays with a piece of gum that's on the ceiling of the taxi, hits the camera and he wipes it off. Got bits of comedy, maybe not the most hysterical comedy in the film, and you've got a fourth wall break. So you're already getting into what kind of film this is going to be right off the get-go. And I feel like they use it really well.
Details like that, you have to give the writers a lot of credit. I don't know how much of a Ryan Reynolds, I know he had a lot of the impact into it, and the director. Those two, they really pushed for the film. And I haven't done enough research to know the whole staff, but I want to give them all credit, because it's not like that was accidental. I feel like every bit of that was calculated. And to me, that's giving them a lot of credit of talent that they were bringing to the screen.
Yeah, I don't feel like anyone was a weak link in this film either, from either a directing, writing standpoint, editing with the whole credit scene, like the opening credit scene. That was really well done. Funny, well done, well shot. I know a lot of it was CGI, but still was well shot.
Yeah, even the visuals.
Yeah, visuals are great. Acting, there was not a single weak acting performance in this film either. Ajax, while yes, he was kind of a pushover at bits, he was still a very threatening villain, because how do you hurt someone who can't physically be hurt or doesn't have an emotional attachment to anything?
Well, I mean, he only had his nerve receptors removed, but he could definitely still feel pain over time.
I mean, not that that was displayed in the film at all.
Yeah, and if you're in a fight with someone, that's usually what helps, that more immediate pain. That's why you land punches. You don't land punches hoping like, oh, I hope I bust a bone. No, it's the fatigue. You feel the pain. Your muscles are trying to recover, heal from more immediate impacts, and that's where you get tired, and that's why you do those kind of actions. That's why someone like that can be a good villain, because yeah, even though it may hurt down the road, you only have like 1 to 2 minutes of a physical fight. Fights don't really last long, and especially on that kind of tier where you're pretty much trying to kill each other, that can give you a huge advantage.
Yeah, and that's where, to me, he is more of a threatening villain. Yes, he's kind of a mustache-twirling villain where he's like, oh, yes, I'm going to sell you. But, like, just that prospect is terrifying right there. First of all, they're tortured, experimented on, and then they're sold into military slavery. That there alone, that type of thing there is still terrifying. Yes, exporting and all that, that's a terrifying prospect.
I'm fully aware of all of that. But my favorite quote of the whole part of the movie is Ajax. You got his name from dish soap. Everyone on the bar just starts giggling. He just looks over. He's like, okay, well, F this. We're leaving this bar.
Yeah, I do like that.
So my favorite lines from the comedy aspect of the movie have to be any of the interactions between Ryan Reynolds and TJ Miller when he's Weasel.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your face looks like Freddy Krueger made love to a topographical map of Utah.
Yeah.
Okay, but I was just about to say that. Oh man, looks like avocado had sex with a much older, uglier, gross avocado. Oh man, that scene in particular where they're just bouncing off of each other, great.
Yeah, and one more shout out at this point is, because we were kind of commending all the pieces to the film, his suit. I mean, that, to me, the way they made that suit look realistic and functional, to me, that's why it was for like the next 3 to 4 years, everybody was Deadpool to everything. Halloween, Comic-Cons, dress-up parties, because the suit just looked really dope and it was functional.
Well, it also wasn't green or animated.
That too.
That too, yeah. They did a really good job at making the suit look realistic, comic book accurate, but it also helped pave the way for other films, because I believe shortly after this, we did get the introduction to Tom Holland's Spider-Man with the emoting eyes. It was in the same year, in fact. And I know that they filmed and edited Tom Holland's bits very late into the game of filming Civil War.
Yeah, and I'm very glad we finally got to that point where those white screens over eyes can have a little bit more emotion to them on the screen. And I really like when Hollywood takes chances like that. And this was one of those turning points, because especially probably for all three of us growing up, when you see the stuff in cartoon format, that's what you have more in your head. You don't have this realistic image of what these suits are going to look like. You have more the cartoony where even though you have the mask, you see the emotions in the mask.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if at some point we're going to get a Batman with those same type of white eyes. I doubt we will, because Hollywood, for whatever reason, doesn't want to make Batman in any sense unrealistic.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Which, on Deadpool's mask, that was the other thing I loved about this movie, was Hollywood tends to be where they have to take the mask, the helmet off all the time, because that's when you see the emotion. And what I love about this movie is he rarely ever takes the mask off once he finally gets his first real suit, or not necessarily first, but you know what I mean, his finalized suit, because you can just see the emotion even with his mask. And I love that.
And Ryan is a very good actor through body language as well, because not only does the mask emote with whatever the scene needs him to do, but like he's very good at emoting with his body language to emphasize anger, shock, frustration, or whatever it is that he's feeling in that scene. So that combo between visual effects and then the actor doing his job to portray an emotion through body language as well is really solid, and it works.
Especially him versus Colossus. One of my favorite scenes in the entire movie.
Yes.
All the dinosaurs feared the T-Rex.
The sound in the movie. The sound department did a perfect job. I'm just playing it in my head over and over.
As soon as I saw Colossus walk up behind Deadpool, I was ready for it, because I had seen it multiple times at this point. He puts his fist back and he just feels around. He's like, Dad? Yeah. Oh, it's so fucked up, but it's funny. While we still have time, Cookie and Regent, I want to ask both of you, where do you guys think that they're going to take the Deadpool franchise in the future? I'll start with you first, Cookie.
Well, the challenge currently for me is to answer that is with Disney, I feel Disney is very strict on the whole R-rated thing right now. I don't know what's officially on record, so I'm more basing off the opinion of the knowledge I do have. They don't really like the whole R-rated thing, no matter what you bring to the table of pre-existing IPs. I'm worried because of that, they're not going to give Deadpool much in the future. I feel like it's just going to be one of those, a movie we put out every few years, and then that's it. I unfortunately don't think they want Deadpool in the entire MCU. I could be wrong. I could see Marvel, the execs at Marvel, especially like Kevin Feige, I could see him maybe pushing for Deadpool more in. The challenge I think would happen is Deadpool would steal the show far too off. I mean, anything you're going to put Deadpool in, he is going to be the main star in it because of just his character is like that. And I think that's where the challenge would ultimately come down to is that we don't want to just add him. It's kind of like Spider-Man. After a while, if you put Spider-Man in any other film with other people, I mean, look at Civil War. Civil War did really well because it was the introduction of Spider-Man. You almost forgot about the rest of the plot.
And the introduction to Black Panther.
Yeah, see, and Black Panther, that was actually a good point too. Stole the show on that one. Even when we did the direct to Disney release that came out last year, once again, they showed up in that and they kind of took over that film. But bringing it all back though, that's the challenge when you have these amazing characters that everyone always loves. You have to be careful in what movies you put them in because yeah, they might sell tickets, but that can also overshadow the plot and storyline. So where I'm getting at is that I feel like the future of it is we're going to get a Deadpool 3, but I don't necessarily feel like he's going to interact heavily into the MCU, even though he deserves to. And that's as far, just only movies, and that's it.
What about you, Regent?
Oh, man. If I had it my way, I would finally put his feud with Wolverine onto film. So I don't know if you two have watched these, but from Deadpool 1 until this current day, there is still playful ribbing between the two of them, Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds. I would love to expect Deadpool 3 to involve Deadpool, like, searching himself for another purpose after Deadpool 2, saving Firefist, or Russell in this case, and he joins the X-Force and meets Wolverine in person, and the whole movie is just them going on missions together with Omega Red. They're just going back and forth about the ribbing throughout the whole movie. And at the very end, Wolverine joins the X-Men house. And he just sees Colossus waiting for him and just starts losing it. Oh, come on, we're back to this. And it cuts out.
I would lose my shit if they recast Wolverine, which they're going to do because Hugh Jackman isn't coming back to the role. And then this current Deadpool, played by Ryan Reynolds, reacts to him being recasted in a film.
Yes.
I don't know if we'll ever get that, but it'd be great. But as far as where I think he's going in the future, I am leaning more towards the direction of Cookie, to where he is definitely getting his own solo film at some point. But as far as his interaction with the MCU, I think characters he will probably interact with, Spider-Man at some point, they interact a lot throughout the comics. I feel like that's a nice dynamic to play with. Or Daredevil, I'd just like to see him and Charlie Cox do something together. I just think that'd be great, because Charlie Cox in the Netflix series just gives no shits. And Ryan Reynolds also gives no shits, but in a completely different way. But yeah, I would agree with you, Cookie, because I don't think that they're going to want Deadpool to outshine other characters. I feel like if they are going to include him in other projects, other films, they aren't going to announce it. It's just going to happen. That way, that's not the primary driver to go see it.
Now, I do want to throw in one. Someone talked about this before on the internet, and it looks like it didn't happen. But speaking on a dream situation, I don't see this happening, but what I would have enjoyed to have happen is that Deadpool was going to step in and start doing the cameos on the behalf of Stan Lee.
Yes.
And definitely respected Stan Lee and his legacy. It still just would have been fun from a comic book standpoint. And I think it would have just been cool that Deadpool could have just been behind the scenes or something. You know, maybe in Spider-Man, he was just buying a hot dog on the side of the street or something. You know, like he doesn't actually have to do any real interaction with the characters, but he'd just be the Easter egg you look for in the films. I think that would have been cool to have moving forward. And honestly, they could still do that if they ever decide to. But it is I kind of do miss that whole, like, looking at every movie and looking for that Easter egg that's in all the same films. Mm-hmm. But I can also respect and understand why they didn't do it after Stan Lee had passed away.
He could have definitely been the guy who's like, all right, Spider-Man, do a flip.
Yeah.
I had seen that theory very shortly after Stan Lee passed, and I wanted to see that, but unfortunately, we're up to this point in the MCU, a few years after Stan Lee's passing, and we still haven't seen it. So I doubt that we're going to see it for a while, if ever. But I want to ask you guys, on that thread of Deadpool, what are two of your favorite scenes from this film? And I'll go to you first, Cookie.
Okay, I did bring up the bridge one, so I'll go ahead and still hold that one to myself. When it was the fight with Colossus, which I don't know if you could really call it a fight. It was very one-sided. And then the other part that I really enjoyed, I actually really enjoyed the intro. And the reason why I say that is kind of going back to where it was really well done from jumping back and forth, understanding where he found the name. And I'm kind of lumping all of it in the beginning to where they catch up, all that beginning section, because they cover a lot of detail and they do a lot of exposition, and they do it so well that there's some movies when you watch, you can feel like this is exposition. When they were doing it, I was just watching it and I was absorbing it and I was enjoying it. And whenever I think about the film, it's really interesting. I think about like the first half way more than I think of the second half. Not saying that the second half's bad, it's just that the first half is just so well done that I think about that more often than I think about the finale, which is very interesting because that's the whole resolution of the whole movie.
What about you, Regent? What's some of your favorite scenes?
So I did say earlier about the whole vocal interaction with TJ Miller, that whole bantering between the two of them. An additional two for me would have to be the interaction with him and Vanessa, how they did the whole getting together, their interaction and leading up to like them being together, and then like him leaving about him having his terminal cancer. The second one I would add would have to be when he's at the helicarrier facing Francis, and he looks at him, he's like, oh, I'm gonna spell it out for you. And then Francis looks over the helicarrier, and then all his men's body parts are cut up and spell Francis across the trackway.
That was a good reveal.
Oh yeah, I love that scene. I want to try and do two different scenes, even though you guys mentioned some really, really good scenes. I would say the scene where they're in the cab on the way to the helicarrier and they find out that there's a person in the back, and he's like, oh, I did not tell you to do that. Drop him off safely, kill him.
Yeah, that was good. The woman I love. There's this guy. That was good.
The romantic rival. And then how she's in the back and she's like, oh yeah, he's super dead. I love that scene. And then another scene I would have to say would be where he actually goes to do the execution of Francis, just with all like the torment throughout the film and the going back and forth, the revenge story, and he can't actually get what he wants. When I first watched it, I was very surprised. So I was like, okay, maybe he will get fixed. It's a little off from the comics, but okay. And then he's like, yeah, I can't fix you. And then he's just like, what's my name? He's like, who fucking cares? Just that was so cold. Shoots him in the face. That was a great scene, especially when Colossus comes in. 4 or 5 moments. That's all it takes to be a hero. And both of them just let out a sigh like, oh.
Yeah.
And Colossus starts throwing up.
Perfect scene.
Even the fact that Francis is like, just like, oh, come on, just shoot me at this point. So yeah, those are two great scenes. Every time I watch them, I like them.
There's one more I do want to squeeze in, is that it's a very small moment, but it's one of my favorite moments in the film, is around that before the big fight happens, when he leaves the guns in the taxi.
Oh, yeah. And then he gets into the car crash and all you hear is screaming.
Yeah. You left the fucking guns.
It was the second time he had done that, too. While we're at like giving props to scenes, would be the Let's Count Them Down scene.
Oh, yeah.
So fun fact, I don't know if you pay attention, but when he is shooting his bullets, the shells are laser etched with different, all the numbers for his magazine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. Especially when he gets like 3 in a row, the grenade shot. Someone's not counting his shots. Just to overall, there's so much to like about this film. I'd say no matter what type of comic book fan or superhero fan or sci-fi or even comedy fan you are, you're more than likely going to like this film. And I think most people at this point have seen it due to either being fans of Marvel superheroes or whatever, or just being existent on planet Earth anytime after 2016. You've probably already seen this film.
And you know what? You don't really need to know anything before watching this film. You can be completely ignorant of it. Sure, they've got a few things with the whole X-Men and some of the jokes, especially like the Green Lantern, but it's not on a level where like you couldn't enjoy the film. It's really small. It's more of just Easter eggs for fans of the genre. But otherwise, if you're completely new, which I've met people who watched this, weren't even comic book people, but they just loved it because it was a good film and it had a lot of good comedy.
Oh, yeah. It's a great film. I don't personally know anyone who wasn't in that sort of circle of liking superhero films and such and then got introduced to this film. I can imagine that being a reality.
Yeah, especially with the movie sales, the tickets, there was definitely a decent number of people who were just new to it. Probably got, you know, talked into it, watch it with their friends.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. So on that note, was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up?
No, I'm excited for the future of the franchise. I believe they'll make a third. I'm really worried that it won't be R-rated, and I feel like that does help with some of the humor in the film. Not saying that a PG-13 couldn't pull it off, especially the MCU has just been throwing out bangers for well over a decade. That does make me a little bit more comfortable in the ideas, as long as the same people like Kevin Feige having that kind of control, but also making sure Ryan Reynolds is there to put in his input, I feel like they could pull it off.
Yeah, as long as you keep Ryan and TJ Miller heavily involved in whatever comes next for Deadpool and give them a green light to do whatever they want, I feel like it'll work. And I just hope that the people who are making the decisions over at Disney and Marvel, Kevin Feige, if you're listening, thank you for listening, but also let them do the movie rated R, please. I know that people are expecting Doctor Strange to be rated R because it's a horror movie, but it's already confirmed it's going to be PG-13. And I have the same fear that they will want to keep Deadpool PG-13 as well, and I think that would be a mistake.
Yeah, at least with Doctor Strange, I feel like that makes more sense because he's always been established in PG-13, everything he's been doing. So I think that's actually completely fair. But Deadpool, two movies, and the odds were against him when you really think about it. At least the first one was. It was a risk for them, and they decided to take a chance, and it worked out well, so...
All right. So I'm going to give my final notes here, being, like I said earlier, no matter what type of fan of cinema you are, whether you like superhero films, whether you like comic books as a whole, or if you like comedies or even a little smidgen of romance, maybe give this movie a try if you haven't already. Been out for nearly 6 years now. If you haven't seen it, please do yourself a favor. It's a great movie. We didn't have anything negative to say about the film at all over the course of recording. So I would give this movie a solid 8.5 out of 10 from a perspective of both cinematic and personal. I think it's a phenomenal film.
Yeah, I'm going to match Venture and say 8.5 on both accounts.
And my final wrap up with the film is I'll give it a 9 out of 10. And instead of speaking of how great the movie is, we've already done that, I'll talk about why I haven't given it a 10 out of 10. I believe the reason in my heart is that some of the humor is reliant on vulgar, foul language and certain imagery that's definitely on the more disgusting end of things. And sometimes I feel like that can take away from more of the skill level of humor and presentation. I have a history of watching a lot of stand-up comedy, and sometimes comedians will actually cuss to more emphasize their joke. Sometimes I feel like that's where this movie falls short at, is that it pushes the envelope. And sure, it's like fun or it's something different, but I do feel like sometimes that does hold the movie back. In their defense, they were kind of the first ones to do something exactly like this. So definitely not something to really knock them back. Obviously, it's a successful movie. And yeah, I believe anybody and everybody should watch it if you like movies, as long as you're good with R-rated films. This is definitely a must-watch.
The only reason I didn't give it a higher score is I think that the humor is reliant upon jokes of 2016 or of the time. So if it were to progress any further than, say, 10 years, people might not understand some of the humor. So that's why I didn't give it a higher score.
It's actually a very good point. Yeah, it's kind of a movie set for a particular time period. Definitely agree with that.
Because I didn't understand some of the jokes. But on that note, Cookie and Regent, thank you very much for joining me for this episode.
Pleasure as always.
Absolutely. Let's do the second one.
Absolutely. We're definitely going to do the second one at some point. So listeners, if you want to hear us cover the second one, please stick around. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed. If you have any movies that you want us to cover, all of our social medias and our email is linked below. So please give us a shout and we'll cover something that you would like us to. Again, thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed. Have a wonderful day. Bye.